This episode of the Blackzit Global Podcast is sponsored by Blackzit Global Passport. Join aspiring Black expats, and repats, where you can build community, get resources, and gain support along your journey abroad. You're invited to join Blackzit Global Passport. Inside Passport, you'll find exclusive workshops on everything from expat taxes, financial planning, insurance, job boards, accountability check-ins, and more. You can even take Passport on the go with our app available for iOS and Android devices. Just click the link in the episode you're listening to or visit blackzitglobal.com and click on Passport. See you inside.
There's two forces in the universe. There's fear and love. And what I've come to now understand and what I've come to observe is that there is a great deal of fear that is happening within the consciousness of my fellow citizens. And unfortunately, I feel like the powers that be are feeding on that fear for a political motive, if you will. And here's the thing. People talk about Trump. But what I am looking at is the consciousness that created Trump, because Trump cannot create himself. He cannot get into power on its own. There is a consciousness. And so, and I have to say this, there is a white man's fear. There is a white man's fear. And Trump just made it acceptable for that fear to be expressed.
Close your eyes and imagine living a life you love, unapologetic and unbothered. Free from daily microaggressions from Karens and Kens. Free from the fear of police brutality and systemic racism. Wouldn't that feel amazing? Now open your eyes. What if I told you that it's possible? Hear inspiring stories and get the actual blueprints from brothers and sisters of the diaspora who are living out their wildest dreams abroad. You've heard the term, now be inspired by the movement. I'm Krishan Wright, and this is Blackzit Global.
Y'all, I am so excited for this episode of the Blackzit Global podcast. This is someone who has come into my universe in the past year, and I'm so delighted, as I know you will be, delighted and inspired by this next guest, Michael Ashanti, who is originally from New York, and is joining me from Barcelona, Spain. Welcome to the podcast, Michael.
Thank you for having me, Krishan.
As soon as I had that first conversation with you last April, I was like, OMG, I have to have this man on the podcast. Mm. He is amazing. And we're going to get to all of the things in your realm that I know and things that I'm sure I will learn through the process of this conversation. But you have a interesting background and varied background. And I want to give you time to start at wherever you feel comfortable in the beginning. I love starting with people's origin stories because I feel that that reveals so much about where they end up later in life. Mm. So if you don't mind, why don't we start there?
Well, before we start there, I first want to say that, first of all, I think that what you're doing is a wonderful thing. It's a blessed thing, is the word I like to use, because none of this was available when I was making my move. So when I think about what is out there today in terms of, you know, Instagram and YouTube and apps, and, you know, it's funny because we're Generation X, so we're the first generation to actually use personal computers, right, in our homes, you know, but in your thinking. But when I was making the decision to move from the United States initially to London, I mean, there was nothing for me to look at or look towards, right, or someone that I can garner information from. So, you know, I wanted to make certain that I was to state, you know, thank you for what you are doing now, you know, for those that would actually need or look to someone or to a resource to actually gain confidence to know that this is also possible. Because when I did it, it literally was, you know, just kind of the gathering of information that I've had from maybe previous experiences in travel and a leap of faith. That really was it. So yeah, I just wanted to put that out there and say you're doing a wonderful
Oh, thank you so much. I mean, I'm inspired because I know we didn't tell the folks, but you left in 2009, and it sounds like on a wing and a prayer. So, yes. I accept that. Thank you.
Yeah, indeed, indeed. So the beginning. So, well, I guess the normal things, right? I'm originally from New York, and to be specific, I was born, what is it, like an hour and a half on the Metro North train outside of New York City in a city called Poughkeepsie. So that's where I was born, Vassar Brothers Hospital. And I was born to immigrants from Jamaica. So my mother, my father, grandparents came from Jamaica into New York and created a community very similar to the community that's being created in Lisbon, interestingly enough. So there was a lot of Jamaicans that moved from Jamaica into the United States, particularly the Northeast. And Poughkeepsie is one of those areas that's quite popular with Jamaicans in the day. So that's where I was born. And probably, 6 years into my life, I think about age six or seven, my father joined the military. And so that's when my global experience actually began. So I have a passport stamped, age six, and our first assignment was in Panama. And it's so funny how life is, right? Because you don't know how all of these things in your life are forming and fashioning you, to either have an understanding or have the courage to do something. Like all of this was kind of feeding into my life. But unbeknownst to me, I'm just kind of tagging along for the ride as the child. So I go from being in New York, dealing with New York as a child in New York, with aunts and uncles in various parts of, New York, whether Poughkeepsie upstate or in Brooklyn, in New Jersey. That was kind of where it started for me. And then my father joined the Army. The first assignment was when I was at age six. And so we left New York and I lived in near Balboa in Panama. And so we spent about a year in Panama. And I will say that definitely switched something in me without me even knowing that it switched something inside of me. Because I would say, number one, I'm living in a country that is speaking a language not my own. It's a tropical environment. So I am seeing iguanas and lizards and huge flying cockroaches. Some people call them water bugs, but this is what I'm seeing at the age of six. And it's very, very humble living, right? I mean, my father at that time and my mother, when they had me, they were 24, 22 respectively. And so, we were just very humble beginnings. And it was also my younger brother with me as well. So I have two younger siblings. And the one that was alive, that was with me at the time, because my youngest one was not born yet, is my brother Jeff. And so we're 3 years apart. So he's 3 years old and I'm six. And I'm attending elementary school. I'm hearing Spanish. I'm beginning to understand that Panama actually has a presence of Jamaican people that are living there as well, because there were a lot of Jamaicans that actually left Jamaica and helped to build the Panama Canal back in that day, in the day. So yeah, Jamaicans are kind of like everywhere I'm coming to learn. And so I'm like, are we like really everywhere? But that was where it all kind of began for me, Krishan. Because now I'm learning a new language. I am hearing salsa music. I am, we're living in very, very humble, accommodation. I think it may have been even a one bedroom or really humble accommodations, where a living room was where my mother and father would have slept. And then my brother and I are in the next room as a bedroom. And my father is, serving our country and at times would have to go away, like on what they call the field. So, whether going out, doing exercises or whatever for the military while, mom and the two boys were staying at home attending school. Of course, my youngest brother is not old enough yet for school. So that was the youngest memory of me actually moving anywhere and living, being global. And that's a very young age. I still have accounts of going on a school bus and meeting neighbors and looking at people that looked like even me, that looked like me, looked like you and I. And, and at the same time, like I said, a whole different environment from a Poughkeepsie environment or a New York City environment where it's tropical. And when it rains, it truly rains, like it's proper rainstorms. And you see iguanas, something that I thought was a dinosaur, to a young six-year-old boy. And you're seeing, flying cockroaches because you're in a tropical environment. But it's what started it all off. And so that was the beginning. From there, we have been assigned, you know, taking you fast forward, we have been assigned, I think the next assignment was Hawaii, either Hawaii or Louisiana, one of those two. But I remember it being Louisiana. Let's just say it was Louisiana, then it was Hawaii, from Hawaii to Washington State down to Florida. And then it was Florida where I became old enough where I went off to university. And so from university, I started, did my undergraduate degree at Florida A&M University in Tallahassee, Florida. So I'm a FAMU Rattlers for the Rattlers out there. And I was in the School of Business and Industry, and my undergraduate was in accounting and business administration. And I went directly onto grad school, which was in Penn State, which, so now we're talking about night and day experiences, because I go from a predominantly, you know, African Afro diaspora university, right? HBCU. And then I go into Penn State, which is, you know, completely a different environment there, where I got my master's in business. And interestingly enough, so you saw the childhood experiences in terms of travel. And I don't even remember if I mentioned during that part of my travel as an Army brat, I also traveled to Germany. So I think I forgot that part. So I was Hawaii, Washington State to Germany. And then we came back to the United States. So I actually spent my teenage years from, I would say, probably like the eighth grade until the eighth or ninth grade until like partly into my sophomore, junior year of high school in Germany. So I would say that was the one that really formed and fashioned the person I am today. Because while I was living in Germany, it was like sort of like an insular situation where you go from living on the army base, right? So I'm with other Americans. I'm not living, let's say, necessarily in the town of Wertheim or Würzburg. I'm going to school in those towns, but my environment are other Americans and other army brats. But it's easy to actually go into those towns because you're just literally just walking away from the military base from where you live, and then just walking into, you know, the real Germany, if you will. So it was kind of cool where I'm living there as an American, but then I'm actually hanging out with German people and learning German in high school while attending high school on the military base. So that was another part of my upbringing, I think, that really kind of shifted something inside of me. Because also, while I'm living in Germany as a teen, and this is ages 13, 14, 15, I'm also able to take a bus to Paris and experience Paris as a teen. And then I'm able to actually take like little trips. I think there was like a youth community center, and I decided to join them on a trip to Spain. So that was my first trip, you know, age 14, thinking I was grown, you know, going to Spain. So these things really truly formed and fashioned the way that I saw the world, but not really even knowing that it was happening to me in that way. So the life that my father chose, you know, in order to live and to survive was forming and fashioning me all that time, and not realizing that when everyone was, you know, talking about, you know, well, I've known such and such, we grew up together, I've known this person for 10 years, 15 years, 20 years, that was not my reality. You know, my reality was I was moving around every 2 to 3 years and experiencing different cultures and different, you know, countries and languages. And this was happening from the age of 6 right up until, you know, I graduated from high school. And so that was where I think that all of this kind of that courage, that so-called leap of faith that, you know, we talked about at the beginning of this, you know, you said, you know, I went on a wing and a prayer. But the truth of the matter is I probably already had air underneath my wings, because the concept or the mindset of moving abroad was not new to me. And I knew what was already out there in the world. And I already knew what was out there in the world as a young Black man, right? Going to these different places. Like, there was nothing for me to fear. As a matter of fact, one of the things that I've come to find out in those experiences is that people really want to know who we are. You know, they really want to know. I feel like the African-American experience that people think they know around the world is sort of limited to what they see on the media. But what they really need to know is who we are, flesh and bone, you know, looking in our eyes and having conversations with us. Because the truth of the matter is that, you know, they are intrigued by us. You know, we truly do have a culture. you know, of our own, you know, Caribbean people, you know, African-American, like we truly have a culture that people are interested in beyond what they see in the media. And so I think that all of that stuff kind of gave me the courage to make the moves that I did, to be honest with you. So, and I would say the next experience that happened prior to me moving abroad as an adult was during grad school. And there was the exchange program during graduate school. So there was an option for me to either move to New Zealand, because they kind of gave us choices. And so there were a few choices. And I think my first choice, interestingly enough, was New Zealand. And my second choice was the UK in Manchester. Or I think I have that switched around. My first choice was the UK and my second choice was New Zealand. I didn't think I was going to get the UK because I thought it would be too popular of an option and there would be competition. And the reason why I chose the UK is because you now know about my Jamaican background. So what has happened is that my paternal side and my maternal side, right? So my maternal side is the United States, but my paternal side came to the UK. And that's my paternal side via my grandmother. So the Windrush generation is my father's mother. And so I have family, all kinds of family in the UK that I've never met. And so I thought that if I would have gotten the opportunity to move to the UK, that would give me an opportunity to see some of my, you know, for the other part of the family branches, you know, the roots and the branches on that side of on my father's side of the family. And so, but I said, let me put New Zealand because I was also intrigued by New Zealand. And I was thinking, it's on the other side of the world. Nobody's going to know what I'm doing.
And everybody knows I love New Zealand. So, you know, you said New Zealand, my eyes just perked up.
You know, because New Zealand was just intrigued me. You know, I'm thinking it's beyond Australia and it's just way over there. And I guess I was kind of bold that way. And I think that, again, I already had all of those experiences leading up to that point that said, it's New Zealand. It's just another continent. Why not? You know, it's just on the other side of another continent. Why not? But I ended up with my first choice, the UK. Ended up going to went to Manchester Business School because part of the program was doing something with an entrepreneur to help them open a business. So I had a team that I worked with, you know, as part of my class and, you know, stayed 3 months in Manchester. And while there, met more of my family, met a lot of my family that actually had history on the roots of our family, going all the way back to the Maroons in Jamaica, as well as, you know, going way back into Ghana. So that led to me as an adult taking a pilgrimage to Ghana. So you can see how all these dots are just connecting, right? Like this has been my life. And it's only kind of talking about it that I go back and I think, whoa, because I don't really think about it. It's just that I just say, this is the adventure that I want, or this is what, you know, as a child, this is what was kind of, this was my, I guess the foundation that was laid for me because of my parents, you know, decision. But then you go from there and you realize you start making decisions on your own about your own adventures. And so because of me meeting my family in Manchester, that inspired me to take a pilgrimage to Ghana, where I spent, you know, 10 days in Ghana, you know, looking at people that I thought were my aunts and uncles and cousins. Like I literally almost by mistake called out to a woman and said, auntie, because I thought that was my aunt Mavis that was actually in Brooklyn, but I'm looking at my aunt in Ghana, in Accra. And one of the gentlemen in Ghana looks at me and he just looked at me and he just said to me, you're North Ghana. Like he doesn't know me from a can of paint. And he literally just looks at me and says, you are North Ghana. And interestingly enough, North Ghana is where the Ashantis are, which is where, you know, my family was able to do the roots and the tracing of our family history. And yeah. And so he was looking at, you know, my teeth, my cheekbones and, you know, and my features and, you know, and so I did a naming ceremony in Ghana. And so my name in Ghana is Ya Nkrumah. And that's basically, you know, Ya is the day you're born on based on tradition. And Nkrumah is basically the name of, or the meaning of Nkrumah means to bring together. So I think that what my whole life has kind of come into is whatever I do, whenever I speak, it is with the intention on trying to build bonds or trying to bring a togetherness. And so I think coming and seeing what you have done and speaking to you, I think that this serves that purpose. It is to kind of bring a sense of community and, you know, just letting everyone know that, you know, it's possible for you, right? Like there's nothing in your life that is wasted. Absolutely nothing. Every experience that you have, you know, serves to build, you know, an experience or a strength or a fortitude, or just there's something in your life that you can use that's going to give you what you need for the next step. And so when I look at my own, you know, I'm thinking, I went from Poughkeepsie to Ghana. Who am I? Who do I think I am? Like, seriously, you know, I'm that nappy headed little boy from Poughkeepsie, New York. And then, you know, all of a sudden now I've made my way into Ghana, and literally all of that, Krishan, for me, let me know and informed me, as I want to inform your listeners, there is more to life outside of the United States. There's so much more. And everyone telling us that it is it and it is everything and it is all. Look, I've always said that America is great at one thing, marketing itself.
You got that right.
America is wonderful. I think it's brilliant. I mean, it will take your mother and have you believe that's not your mother and sell your mother back to you as if it was doing something new. That is the brilliance of American marketing in my mind. And so I've come to learn throughout my years and moving and living and experiencing all these different cultures that, guys, there's so much more. And there is no such thing as a country being the best country, much less being the best at any one thing. And, you know, you're doing yourself a disservice. You know, even if you're not looking to move abroad, you are doing yourself a disservice by not at least experiencing other cultures and spending time traveling, just doing that much. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, so, absolutely right. And there's so much that, like, as you, and thank you for taking me on that journey, because I love that it's still so there in your mind, because as you were talking about your experiences in Panama and, you know, in Manchester and in Ghana, it's like I could paint a picture in my mind. And so I love that it's still so vivid for you. And even as I think about the time that you spent in the UK prior to you going to FAMU, how was that? Because your identity, you know, as how we think about it in a traditional sense, your identity as a Black male from the United States was very different than the average Black male who would be attending FAMU. And so how do you think that, or maybe, like, I guess the better question is, how was that transition?
Just so that I'm clear, the transition from
being abroad to then now coming back and then going to an HBCU. Like, how was that transition?
Yeah, that's a good one, because, and I'm gonna answer that on three levels for me. Because the thing is that it's almost like I didn't know it then, but I'm now looking back and realizing there was always what I thought was a conflict inside of me in terms of how I identified myself. Let me explain. So, of course, I'm growing up with the African-American experience, right? I'm born in America. I go to school in America. For the moments that I'm in the United States, I would say there were three experiences I was having simultaneously. That's what I would say. The first experience, of course, is as an African-American male in the United States. You know, I was born in America, you know, for the times, of course, that my father was stationed in the United States. I'm having that experience. And I'm also having, you know, both positive or normal experiences, as well as those negative experiences, you know, that one encounters with racism. I've had those experiences. One in particular that just struck me in my mind, I remember actually having a conversation with the guidance counselor, and she actually looked at me because I had taken an IQ test. I remember that day. And she said to me, "Michael, you seem to be a bit different, quote unquote, than the other students." And I knew exactly what she meant. She basically was saying the other Black students. And the first thing that she asked me was, "Where are your parents from?" And so it was one of those things that really struck me and stayed with me, because it was almost like someone was telling me, not only are you Black, but you're Black other. So I'm having those experiences in the United States, because even though I am born in America, raised in America, the interesting thing is that now I'm being other blacked, if you will, because my parents are from the are from Jamaica. And then on top of that, I'm getting, you know, microaggressions and you know, and these sort of racist innuendos, if you will, not only from what we would expect, right? But also sometimes I was getting it from my own people, because what would happen is that they would hear, let's say, my father's accent. And so, or they would listen to the way that I'm speaking. And so there were moments where I was growing up in school with my brothers and sisters being called a white boy, because my parents were very, very strict. Coming from Jamaica, my parents were very strict about proper diction and doing my homework. Like, I had one of those parents that just didn't play. Like, you know, you have one of those mothers that just gave you the look. That was my mother, my grandmother. Like, literally, like, they would just give you the look and you know what's coming next. And so the discipline factor in my household was one where I was more scared of my parents than I was of authority in school, because if I didn't do something correct in school, I knew what was going to come when I was getting home. So having that kind of upbringing, there was me kind of dealing with, okay, I'm dealing with racism from the quote unquote majority in the United States. I'm dealing with, you know, the fact that I still identify as an African American because I'm having all those experiences, but I'm also identifying with the fact that my family comes from the Caribbean. But I'm also identifying with the fact that I've had this global experience. So I don't fully feel all the time all American, because now I've had this influence over my head that says, there's something else, there's more. And where do you put that? You know, when you're kind of back in the United States now as a youth, you know, and it's not like my life was my own. I'm still a teenager, or I'm still a young adult. You know, I'm not an adult yet. You know, I'm not graduated from school yet and, you know, full-fledged adult at that time yet, where I'm making my own decisions about what's next. So I would say that there were always like almost three dimensions to my being. You know, there was the, what I thought I was just a normal, everyday little black kid from Poughkeepsie, New York. There was the, but you were also raised by Caribbean parents. Right. In a realm where you have children that were born and raised with parents that were born and raised in the United States. And then also dealing with the fact that I also have this experience where I've lived abroad. So now I've picked up a couple of languages, you know, maybe not perfectly, but I've picked them up in my experiences. So I'm that kid that has a little bit of Spanish and like salsa. I'm that kid that actually picked up a bit of German. So now he understands what it means to say, ich liebe dich, you know, du nimmst, you know, and things of that nature. So it's funny that you asked that question, because you're kind of bringing it to mind that there was always this internal kind of conflict in me, I think, if, you know, if that makes any sense. There was always that something inside of me that said, I don't quite fit in any one place. I think you really kind of triggered something. I may have to go to therapy for this. You got me thinking. Yeah, there was.
Sometimes people think this podcast is some sort of therapy. So hey,
let me go and see if I can find a therapist. Because the truth is, you know what? I think there was a point, to be honest with you, where I no longer fit in into one. So I think that was a long way of getting to the answer of, I didn't quite fully fit in into any one thing. I was not fully American. I was not fully African American. I was not fully Caribbean American. I was not fully that expat that just came from abroad. And I'm all of those things. Or maybe I transcend those things. I don't know. But I just know that there was an unease and an unsettling. So that's a really great question. Yeah.
So picking up on that, using your words, unsettling, was it that feeling in 2009 that prompted you to leave America and to go abroad for good?
Absolutely. And I will say it was the feeling of being unsettled and always feeling like there has to be more to this than this rut. I mean, I'm living in New York City at this point. I've graduated from grad school. I've lived in New York. I'm doing the rat race thing, as you can imagine, right? I'm living in Brooklyn now. living that life, you know, I have my friends living that life. And I'm going back and forth on the D train from Prospect, you know, to Times Square in New York, living and working in a law firm. And I think there was a point where I felt that, and I remember it very distinctly. I remember being on the subway and falling, like, you know how it is when you're really tired in the morning and you're kind of nodding off to sleep because you're like, I really don't work today. And I was thinking, is it going to be like this for the next 10, 20, 30, 40 years of my life? Just this? I actually remember asking myself that question. I really do. And at that point, I said, no, there has to be more. And so at that point, my experiences start kicking in, right? Now I'm remembering. I am bringing myself all together, right? All the different parts of myself, I am remembering and pulling it together. But then I'm thinking, okay, I'm having this thought, but what's going to give me the courage to actually throw myself over the fence? Now, interestingly enough, I met someone who is now 15 years later, my husband and my partner, 15 years. But what's interesting about this is he lived at the time in the Dominican Republic. So let's add another country to the list.
And oh my gosh, I did not know that about your husband.
Yes, wow. he lived in the Dominican Republic, but his story is one that would shock a lot of people too, because how he got to the Dominican Republic is interesting because he's originally from what people would know back then as former Yugoslavia and today known as Serbia. And so during the NATO strikes in Yugoslavia, yes. So there were quite a few people that left, you know, what is then known as Yugoslavia, but today we know as Serbia, Croatia, Bosnia Herzegovina, all of those different countries, Slovenia. They left and went to various places around the world for safety and for a better life because, you know, there were bombs coming down. And so my partner recalls hearing bombs, you know, from the NATO in Serbia. And so, you know, with it being the situation that it was, he left there. And one of the places that he could go that did not require a visa back then was the Dominican Republic. So, yeah. And so that was his story. So we came just to know each other because I guess there was something similar to what was Tinder today, but it was nowhere near. It's nowhere near as brutal as it is today in the dating world. I think it was
the streets are rough out there. Let me tell you.
I know the streets are rough, but I know back then what was it called? Something like that. It was one of those apps where all we could literally do was, you know, and this is back technology. Now we're talking about the late 90s. If you will, early 2000s. So nothing like it is today. Like the apps and all that stuff did not exist. So it was meeting someone online and just chatting, say, hey, how are you? How are you doing? And that's how we were. We were literally just having just wonderful conversations long distance, you know, and never thought that I would meet a person, but, you know, he would just send pictures and say, oh, he's a nice guy, seems to be nice, but I didn't think it would actually go anywhere. But then we got to the point where I was actually doing something in Puerto Rico. I think, oh yeah, I owned a condo in Puerto Rico. And so I went to Puerto Rico to actually do some renovations on it and clean it up a bit. And he says, well, while you're in Puerto Rico, why don't you come and visit me in the Dominican Republic? So I went to visit him in the Dominican Republic. And let me tell you something, like he pulled out all the stops. Like he made sure that he booked the best hotel. He made sure that I was comfortable. He made sure that I was well fed. And I was just like, oh, okay, thanks. That's very nice. And I'm like thinking to myself, well, what am I going to do with all of this? He's a really great guy, but I live in New York. You live in the Dominican Republic. So here we are, you know, just talking and chatting, getting to know each other more and realizing that his intentions are true. Like they're really real because some people would think, oh, he's just trying to immigrate to the United States, that sort of thing. But we have to remember, this is the early 2000s, and there was no law in place for same-gender people to marry. So I said all of that to let everyone know and let you know that a decision needed to be made because now we're finding each other getting closer and closer to each other. Now he's taking trips to the United States and visiting me in New York. And during this time, his mother is ill and she's about to transition. And one of the things that bonded us together was 2 years prior to that, my mother had transitioned. And so I'm watching, and I always said, if you really want to know what a man is like, watch how he treats his mother. And so I'm watching him sending money to his mother. I'm watching him calling up Serbia and making certain that his mother had the best care of a nurse in Serbia. Like, I'm watching him buying airplane tickets and leaving the Dominican Republic and flying to Serbia, but on his way to Serbia, sees fit to come and visit me in all of this. And so I'm looking at this spirit and I'm looking at this soul and I'm thinking, and I'm praying, I'm asking, what's really going on? Because, you know, I'm a brother and I'm thinking, you know, I'm going to meet my Nubian sort of king in New York and that's what it's going to be for me. But now here comes a Serbian man who don't look anything like the Nubian, you know, king that I was looking for. What am I supposed to do with all of this? And so I realized at that point there was a maturing going on. And at the same time, it was, well, what are you looking for as a friend? What are you looking for is what that person is providing to his mother. That's what you're looking for, you know, because, you know, looks and all this other stuff will not sustain. It's when you get into that older age where you can sit next to each other and say you're friends, and you know that he has a nurturing spirit inside of him because you're watching him doing it. And that's what you need in your life. And so it got to the point now where we're being serious. And the laws in the United States were such that there was no marriage laws where I can even sponsor him. So Krishan, you're now at the story. I am dealing with one part of me that's saying there has to be more to life than this rut. And then the other part is, I really, really feel like I can make a future with this person, but there's no options for us in the United States. What do we do? So now here we are. You are now at the story. And so now you're at the story.
And it's so such a beautiful love story. As I'm listening to it, it's like, oh my God. Because like I said, I had to play, well, I'm saying it like they know. I recently had the pleasure of meeting your husband in person. And like, now it's like putting it all together. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what a beautiful love story.
And it was the sacrifice of him making all those trips to come to get to see me and get to know me. And mm-hmm. when his mother finally died, you know, him crying in my arms and going through all of that, and, you know, together. And still we are distant apart from each other, me not knowing what's going to happen and me not even looking for love. Like, I was good. Like, I was, you know, I had lost my mother in 2004. And I was at the point where I was like, you know what, let me just be about me. Let me just deal with me. Let me get myself together. I'm at crossroads in my manhood. I need to figure out where I'm going. But then here he comes along when I'm not looking and realizing that he wants to give me all this goodness, you know, and I just feel like, Michael, this was the answer. Like, this is your mother answering you. This is his mother answering him. You need goodness in your life. And so a decision had to be made, because it was either we cannot continue in this long distance relationship because that's not going to be sustainable, or we need to make some big decisions about where we go next. So I decide, okay, let's start doing some research. And again, the research I'm talking to you about is prior to all the help that you're able to give, or all the help that we see out there, you know, from, you know, different people, whether it's Black in Portugal or, you know, the expat app, you know, Black expat apps, or all of these beautiful things that I'm seeing, you know, happening today. None of this was happening. So this was Michael Ashanti and being tenacious and being very clear that there was something to do. I'm a great researcher. If you need someone to research something, I'm your man. So I get online and I start making it happen. So I look at Canada, because Canada had a points-based system. So now I'm introducing something, a new concept to some people, in the fact that I know some people look at moving because of retirement, but I represent those people that are moving, that are still active in life and still work. So what do you do? What options do you have? So what I looked at was a points-based system based upon skills. Because I knew that I had an advanced degree, and I knew that I had a certain number of years experience doing what I was doing. I just didn't know how that could transform and help me in any way to go somewhere else. And because I knew Canada was ahead of America, when it came to, you know, gay marriage and same gender laws, right? Of, you know, civil unions, domestic partnerships, and all of that. So then a coworker of mine said, Michael, you should also consider the Netherlands. But I never thought about the Netherlands because in my mind, the Netherlands was, I just thought about Amsterdam and the red light district, and I was not interested. That's all I knew. That's all I knew. So again, the importance of traveling and seeing things for yourself, because all I knew of the Netherlands was Amsterdam. And now, and the funny thing is, I've lived in Amsterdam for 4.5 years as an adult, and I could tell you it's really a lot more than that. But again, only knowing what you know, sometimes your decision-making process is limited, right? The other part of this was thinking, wait a minute, what about the UK? And so I found out that there was a visa at that time called a tier one visa. And a tier one visa is a visa for highly skilled, what they call highly skilled migrants, points-based system. So it's a combination of your education, language speaking ability, of course, English being my first language, that was a no-brainer. It was also a combination of income, so how much income I was making. And I should tell you, it's very important to say in the story, at that time, the US dollar to the pound, the US dollar was crap. Like the value of it, I think it was like nearly 2 to 1. Like 1 pound was $2. Like it was horrible. So when I was doing the conversion from the dollar back to the pound, I barely made it by the skin of my teeth. When I tell you, barely, because the value of the dollar against the pound at that time, which was 2008, when I was going through the documentation, I barely made it in. So thankfully, I had the points because of my master's degree, language speaking ability, years of experience. And interestingly enough, Krishan, if you want to see how magic works, I was working for a law firm in New York whose mother office was in London. And if you really want to know how magic works, a manager from the London office comes to New York because she wanted to help the New York office find a manager for the New York office. In the process of her being there, I didn't know that she was watching me. So she said to me privately, and I know her name, I'm not going to put her on blast, but I want to thank her, and I still continue to thank her to this day. She said, Michael, I've been watching you. I've been watching how you handle the partners in the law firm when it comes to their request. And I was working in document technology at that time. She says, I know that you're looking to find a way to move to the UK. Now, I will see what I can do to see if there's any way that we have any internal lawyers that can help you. She says, but if we're not, if you are able to get the visa that you are looking to get on your own, I want you to know that there are two positions that I have available in London. And I have a person that I want to extend an offer to already in London. But because of who you are, I have two positions. You can choose the one that you desire, and then I can offer the one that's remaining to the other person. Let me tell you something.
Wow. That is good.
Let me tell you something. This is a shorter white woman from the UK who does not know me from a can of paint, looking at me and saying to me, I see something in you. And so I submit the paperwork, I get a rejection because there was something that they could not figure out in my paperwork with regards to the income. But I quickly figure out what it is that they need. I gather that paperwork together faster than Usain Bolt can cross the finish line in the Olympics. And I send that paperwork back. And I'm going to tell you this, on December the 23rd, 2008, I got my approval. Now, prior to that, I enter a civil union with my partner. On October the 30th of 2008, we enter a civil union in the state of New Jersey. But as you know, civil unions mean nothing in that time. But I knew that it would mean something with regards to me sponsoring him to the UK. So I get my visa, and on December the 31st, almost midnight hour, I have a one-way ticket to London. And I make my way to London, and I land in London on the 1st of January, 2009, New Year's Day. Yes, ma'am. And then 6 months later, I'm going through the process of sponsoring my partner from the Dominican Republic to directly to the UK. And he arrives in June, just in time for his birthday on the 6th of June. And that's where it all begins. And so it was me going from New York to London on that visa that started it all off for the both of us. And in 5-6 years' time, we decided that let's go for our citizenship. So we both got our British citizenship and took the exam, took the test, because there is a test. You know, you had to know the history and all that good stuff. So we took the test. I don't even think that British people knew, you know, half of the questions that we had to know, because I had a good time talking with my coworkers at that time about the questions. And they were like, bloody hell, we don't even know what that means. So we spent a good 6 years, almost 6 years, because we had to be residents in the UK and then, you know, go through the permanent resident route, of course. And then after then you're a year as a permanent resident, then you are eligible for citizenship. And that's citizenship. And at that time, that opened up the doors for us to live and work anywhere in Europe. Because as you know, then prior to, God, I hate saying the word Brexit, but Brexit, that's painful now. That I require therapy. We were able to move and be anywhere in Europe because it was, you know, Britain was part of the EU. So, yeah. And so that's when I said, oh, I can live and work anywhere where I can find opportunity. So that's how that started. So it was a combination of love. And to be honest with you, it was also a very clear, instinctive, intuitive thing where I said, there has to be more. There has to be more. And again, I didn't have anybody to say, you know, I didn't have a checklist. I didn't have someone to hold my hand. All I had was, this is what I'm trying to do. All I had was my prayers, my faith. And the truth of the matter is, if you are very clear about what you want, the universe really, truly does conspire in your favor. Like it really, like I have proven it in my own life. If anybody says otherwise, I know that they are a liar and the truth is not in them, because I have proven it with my own life that if you are clear with what you want, it's amazing how the universe just snatched it together. Okay, well, I'm going to send a manager from the UK and they're going to see you. Okay, they're going to offer you a job. Because here's the funny thing. That visa actually allowed me to go to the UK without a job. But that's not something I wanted to do, because we have to have our finances in place moving abroad. That's not something that you just, right? So the thing is that not only did I go over with this visa, but I went with a job offer in the same company that I was working for. So, can you imagine, right? Like, this is how the universe is moving things together. And yeah, it was just operating in my clarity. And the other thing that I was very clear about was I knew that someday I would want to work for myself. I knew that. And so healthcare was a consideration of mine. Even back then, it was a concern. And mind you, back in 2008, you know, copays were nothing like I hearing they are today. Like, I talk to my friends in the United States today and I'm listening to their copays and I'm thinking, yeah, you need to move today. You need to come. You need to leave America today. Like, I don't even want to have this conversation anymore. Like, I'm hearing the copays that my friends are paying today.
It's insane.
It's bananas. And I'm thinking, there's no way. And so that was one of the huge considerations that I had, was not just I want to go, but I also want to ensure that I have some kind of a support network in place. And so in my research, I knew that there was universal health care in Europe. And I knew that the UK had the NHS. And so that was a huge consideration for me. So, Krishan, you know, that was the magic that took place. Those were the different, you know, variables that happened. I would say it was not only just there was something more, but I was also involved. Or I should say I was a witness to the September the 11th attacks in New York, because I worked in the World Financial Center back in that time. And so with all of those things that were just kind of happening, just looking at life, looking at where I wanted to be, looking how I wanted life to be, it had to be more than just work. You know, seeing what happened with the September the 11th attacks, you know, meeting my now partner of 15 years, I just felt like there was more. There was more. And because I had experienced all that I had experienced, I felt like it was important for me to at least try. Mm-hmm. And I knew that if it didn't work out, you know, your life is like a steering wheel. If it doesn't work out, you just steer it in a different direction. It's okay, you know, but yeah. I could not imagine my life, living my life with regret, not having done it, because I knew that I could always go back to America if it didn't work out, right? But the opportunity to go and to experience something does not come to you all the time, and it may not come to you in the way that you want it if you keep trying to delay that decision, waiting for the perfect scenario to kind of come together.
Ooh, you said something there, because I think by human nature, we want everything to go according to the way we think it should go. And life doesn't always hand it back to us in that way.
Amen. And that was a huge one for me, because I know that I do like to have I's dotted and T's crossed. I am one of those. But I also knew, and I think about that today, and it's something that I think about when I'm having conversations with my family or with friends. And I'm sure you're going through the same scenario as well, is that, you know, I'm saying, guys, what? Come, just come. You don't even understand how many times I've said to my family, come. But their mindset is, well, I have this job and I have tenure in this job, and I don't know if I can make the same kind of money over there. And I said to them, I said, making a change requires that you are willing to reinvent, to reevaluate. Like, you are not leaving a life to replicate. You are not leaving a life to replicate. You're doing this to bring about an improvement in the quality of your life, to bring about, you know, a peace of mind. And whatever it is that you feel like you're giving up, you're getting so much more. And it just requires a mindset shift. And so I realized that in me leaving New York, because I remember even having this conversation with my manager, and she was talking to me about my salary. And I was like, I'm making what? But in New York, I made this. So I was already with that attitude. So I empathize, and I do get it when I'm having those conversations with my American friends and family. But I remember hearing Spirit say, get out of your way, Michael, get out of your way. I'm blessing you. I need you to get out of your way. Let me do this for you. I will take care of you. Just go. So I looked at the offer. I said, okay, it is what it is. I will figure it out when I get there. And you know what? 15 years later, living overseas, I figured it out, you know? But the magic was, you know, the combination of looking at life as it was in New York and saying that there was more, looking at this relationship I was having and realizing I didn't have any options, you know, for us to live in America together. So having the courage to say, so what do we do? Because it's either going to be, we need to either part ways because the long distance thing is not going to work. It's not sustainable over the long term. Or we need to find a place where we can both be together and build together.
So is that what ultimately led you both to Barcelona?
Well, what led to Barcelona was, I'm sick of the cold weather. So
Caribbean kicked in.
I was like, I ain't got time for this. I'm done with this. I'm like, you know, I was living in the UK, and look, London is fabulous. Like, London is the same energy like New York. Like, London is you know, it's busy, it's bustling, it's the rat race. So I felt like I was just repeating more of New York, and I knew at some point I didn't want more of New York. But you know, but London is amazing because, you know, like the Jamaican stuff that I was craving, like food and people, it's in London, right? It's like, it's London. London has it in the UK in general, but London has it. You know, international friendships, like people from everywhere. As a matter of fact, I think I've heard more languages. I potentially may have heard more languages in London than I did in New York. I'm getting the sense, I think that I've actually heard more languages in London. Like, London truly is international in every way. But it was crazy. It was like New York. And I'm thinking, I don't want this. And on top of that, all of you need a bit more sunshine in this country, because my melanin is not getting the required dosage of vitamin D, and this is not working for a brother. And I didn't even know that that was an issue until I realized I was like really in a funky mood a lot of times. And I'm like, I'm not a funky mood person. What's really going on with me? So I'm going to my GP, general practitioner, as they call in the UK, not the doctor, the GP. And the GP says, Michael, you actually may have low vitamin D, because you know, we don't even think about this, Krishan. Like in New York, for example, New York actually gets an average of, I think, around maybe 200 hours of sunshine a year. I could be wrong a little bit, but I know that New York gets a lot more sunshine than the United Kingdom. Like the state of New York gets more sunshine. America in general gets more sunshine than the United Kingdom. And so I found myself in a funky mood a lot. And I noticed that it was really heightened always during the cloudy times, which was quite often in the United Kingdom. Like it was just bad. And I noticed that every time I went on a holiday from the United Kingdom to Spain or to Malta or to Greece, like any holidays that I took, which by the way, people, these holidays are amazing. You know, in between, like you gotta come. Like it's easy to do. Ryanair, EasyJet, it will change your life. I digress, but back to the United Kingdom. So I realized I need a life in the sunshine. I can't do this. Oh. So when we got our British passport, I knew that it opened up an opportunity for us to live and work anywhere in Europe. And I ended up with a job offer, incidentally, in Barcelona. But that was in 2015. Unfortunately, the job was a really, really bad fit. It was bad. It was probably one of the worst experiences that I've had. But at least in the interim, it did two things to me, that experience. It introduced me to what it would be like to live in continental Europe. And I actually also put together, it was my first time doing it, but I actually put together a vision board for myself. And in that vision board, I actually wrote down, amongst many things, I remember writing down location independence. I actually remember doing that in 2015. And I wrote down at some point, financial independence, location independence, better relationship with family. Like I remember my vision board, it was like a whole diagram. I cut out pictures, put it up. Let me tell you. And I said, okay, what skill do I need that's going to get me to the place where I could become location dependent and at some point financially independent, the way that I envision. So because the job opportunity in Barcelona was awful, I remember at that point deciding to change. Right before I left the UK, I changed careers. Reinvention. Very important, right? And so in that reinvention, I ended up honing skills and gaining skills. Then I got an offer from Booking.com that everybody knows from Booking, the company Booking.com in the Netherlands. And it's what I did there. And then also deciding to amp it up and like get certifications in my field. Eventually, I got from the point where I was working as an employee to doing what I do today, which I'm self-employed as a consultant. And so as I was doing that in the Netherlands, of course, the Netherlands is just as bad when it comes to cloudy weather and gray weather like the UK. I said, I got to the point where I felt confident enough to say, my vision board, it's coming to life. So I'm now self-employed. I'm actually sustaining a lifestyle with my self-employment. Like I bought a house in the Netherlands. I'm paying mortgage. I'm saving money now. I'm investing money, right? Like I'm doing all those things as a self-employed person in the Netherlands. And so I said, now it's time for a lifestyle. So in the middle of the pandemic, since I'm bold like that and crazy like that, I've already proven that I'm crazy. So in the middle of a pandemic, you know, we sell our house in 2021 and move back to Barcelona. And we bought a house here in Barcelona and I'm doing what I'm doing, self-employed, you know, servicing clients all throughout Europe and the world. I had clients in the United States. And now, you know, we have a pet store where my partner and I, we own a pet store, a pet shop that sells premium pet food to dogs and cats here in Barcelona. And yeah, it's been a whirlwind.
It's been a whirlwind and it's been a major pivot because I love how you talked about the vision that you laid out for your life, and intentionality, of course, is a big theme. And I agree with you with like the way I look at it, and it's only been a few months, my life in the US to my life here in Portugal. You know, one of the big selling points for me, and I hadn't really thought about it until you mentioned it, was like Portugal has like 300 days of sunlight, you know, yes. And I was like, out of a year, and I was like, oh yeah, I need that. And really, this is the first time in my adult life that I haven't experienced seasonal affective disorder in the winter, like getting really, really depressed, the weight gain. So I totally understand, but I'm so glad that, you know, the path maneuvered you in the journey to Barcelona. But I'm curious how the pet store came to be. And I ask this only because, you know, I am a pet owner as well. I have a little pet baby.
our furry children, yes. Yeah. Well, I have a fur boy as well. Like, and the funny thing is that, and by the way, the reason why we chose Spain, because we had been to Portugal, and I love Portugal, just so that everyone understands. I love Portugal. So much so that I travel from Spain to Portugal to go to those events. Like, I love Portugal and I love the people of Portugal, and I'm even taking Portuguese now. So I love Portugal.
Oh, yay. And that's also where we met.
Yes, and that's where we met. But because I had spoken already some Spanish, and also my partner's fluent in Spanish. So Spain kind of made sense from the standpoint of the skills, the linguistic skills that we both already. So, and then also because we had spent so much time in Spain traveling from the UK, like we've come back and forth to Barcelona so often and Sitges so often, Alicante and Malaga, like we've been here so often that we were like, okay, we're familiar with it. And we went to Portugal, and I'm going to tell you something. Portugal was magical for me, and I actually felt like there was something there. But because my life at that time back then was tied to where I was working, the job I was having, that's where, and I should also mention that. So that was part of the decision-making process of not necessarily choosing Portugal at that time. Now it's very different because if that's somewhere where I want to go, that's something I can do because I'm doing what I do for myself, or we can expand the business into Portugal, right? So it's a very different life we're living today than the one that we had 10 years ago. So what got us into the pet shop business is my partner and I are, you know, especially Boban, like he loves dogs. Like he will see a dog. I think he has a dog spirit. I think he might've been a dog in a life before. Like he sees a dog and he just, his heart just melts. Like he's just a pet lover. And I think that what really pushed us over the edge was the pandemic. What really pushed us into opening and trying our hand to say, you know what, let's just jump and take the leap of faith was the pandemic, because my partner has always been in the service industry. And we know what the pandemic did to the service industry, right? If we, you know, like if we all remember, right, like what it did to, like it's so, it's amazing how all of us are crying out to, can we please go to a coffee shop, or can we go to a restaurant, or can, you know, or wanting to go to a hotel. My partner's, his background was hospitality. So he worked in hotels. That was his background. And he was a professional massage therapist in the Dominican Republic. So he was always doing either concierge services or massage services in hotels and hospitality. And then he gets to the UK. And, you know, he continues to work in hospitality. Then we go, of course, into the, you know, from Barcelona, where the job was not great, go to the Netherlands, where we lived for about 4.5 years. And he works in hospitality in the Netherlands. But of course, the pandemic comes and everything shuts down. So I said to Boban, I'm like, Boban, you know what? I want you to do what I did with my life. I want you to reinvent. Now is the time. The universe is not going to continue to keep speaking and repeating itself over and over again. Now is the time. So when he was getting payments, right, I think, you know, payments from the employee while everyone was having to sit at home, I actually said to him, I got us. All that money you got coming in, you're going to stack. Look, I need you to stack these chips like Vegas. Stack these chips like Vegas. You're not spending nothing. Because this is going to be the way in which you're going to finance the dream. I got us, right? God has made it possible. I got you and me. All those chips, stack them. And that's exactly what he did for those 2 years. And so we stacked the chips. We ended up moving during the pandemic into Barcelona. And the first thing we say is, it's time now to make your dream come true. So while I'm holding us down we open up the store. We open up the shop right here in Barcelona. And by the way, I should mention, while we were living in the Netherlands, we also adopted our black lab, Neo. And what's interesting about Neo is actually from Spain. So what's funny about Neo is I was working with a coworker in the Netherlands who remembered that I was talking about dogs a lot. And the funny thing is he's a Dutch man, but he was actually traveling from Spain to the Netherlands to do work. He was living in Malaga in Spain with his wife. And they actually saw our Neo being chained outside and not being well cared for. And so he said, so what they did is they took our Neo and said, no more. We're going to rescue him and we're going to foster him until we could find the right home for him. So Jeroen remembered, his name's Jeroen, he remembered that I was talking about wanting a dog. And the interesting thing is, it was the exact same kind of dog that I had been wanting, which is a black lab. And so he says, well, Michael, if you want this lab, we'll be happy to give it to you and to Boban. Let me tell you, I said, well, what can I do? How much is the dog? He says, we'll bring it to you. It's a gift from us to you. I said, well, I have to do something. So I bought a crate. They flew Neo from Spain to the Netherlands on a Transavia flight. FYI, Transavia flies your pets who are over a certain weight in carry. So Transavia is awesome. Flies them from Malaga to Spain. I think they landed, from Spain, Malaga, into Rotterdam in the Netherlands. Drive from the Netherlands, Rotterdam, to our home in Amsterdam. Delivers Neo. And Neo has been with us ever since. So it's the love of animals. It's Neo. You know, just seeing Neo and how we treat Neo. I do home-cooked meals sometimes for Neo. I've actually developed a passion around natural health food for dogs and cats. So the food that we offer in Spain is only premium quality. Like, we don't do extruded dog foods that are like at high temperatures. We only do cold pressed food for dogs and stuff like that. But that's what actually started the passion. And so it was the pandemic and saying, now is the time for you to make that move. Now is the time. So stack those chips, Boban, stack them. I got us, right? So while we're stacking chips, we're moving to Spain. We sold our house in the Netherlands. We bought a home here in Spain. We're stacking the chips, and then we start doing the research, and then we get it together, and we open up a store, and it'll be a year in February.
Oh my gosh, congratulations.
Thank you.
And I believe in promotion, so if you don't mind sharing the name so that people, when they are in Barcelona, that they can come and patronize.
Oh, sure. Thank you. The name of the store is called Furry Chefs, and it's in the Gràcia region. So it's in the center, in the heart of Barcelona. Yeah, it's called Furry Chefs, and it is on IG as Furry Chefs. So
awesome.
Yeah, it's on IG. So FURRYCHEFS. It's on IG as well as Facebook. And again, we cater only to premium foods. Premium quality foods for dogs and cats. So any of those very popular commercial brands that you're accustomed to seeing in the big chain dog, pet shops, you will not see in ours. So we focus on cold pressed food for dogs and cats, high quality, dehydrated, all natural foods, like no preservatives, no gluten. We have a barf, some barf diet, or what some people know as raw diet. So we have those as well. So yeah, that's what we do. And we discuss it and we talk about it. And, we're eventually going to we're actually working on it now, our website. We're working on it now as we speak so we can offer delivery. But yeah, Furry Chefs, come on through. God. If you're visiting, yeah, come on through. Say hello to Boban.
Please, definitely, for those of you who are listening and are planning travel, I will link that in the show notes for this episode so you'll have it handy. But since you were talking about pivots and big life decisions during the pandemic, when we met in April of last year, it was on the heels of another big life decision and transition that you made. You mind sharing that with the audience?
You mean wanting to move to Portugal?
No, a little bigger. Something about citizenship.
Oh, you're taking me down that path. Oh my gosh. Ooh, we don't have the time, do we? How many more lifetimes do y'all have to listen to this? So
Well, yeah, this is already going to be a two-parter.
No, this is big. It's big because, to be honest, yeah, I renounced citizenship. That's what you're. Yeah. So I already know the hairs on people's necks are standing up. Yes, I had renounced citizenship last year, December 2022. So 2022. So we're only in January. So yes. So what led up to that? You know what? The funny thing is, in all of this, what I did not mention was, as we're living our lives here in Europe, we're watching the changes that are taking place back home. You know, I'm watching what's going on. Because the thing is, a lot of people feel as if you leave America and you no longer care. I'm going to be honest with you. I think you almost care more. I think you almost care more what's going on back home, because you're watching with horror and you're thinking, surely we're better than this. Surely. But the other thing that I come to realize in living abroad is how awakened I've become to the reality of what is going on back home. Because I think that when you're living in the US, you're kind of in it and your head is down and you're just kind of living in your life and all you want is your venti Starbucks coffee. And, you know, you just want to, you know, you're just living that life, whatever that life is, you're just kind of in it. And when you're out of it, and then you're looking back at it, and then you're traveling back home on a constant basis. But all the while you're doing that, you're growing and you're evolving as an individual. Like, this is what's happening to me in Europe. Like, now I'm talking to people from different cultures and different languages, and I'm learning about what's happening around the world, not just the United States. And then I'm learning about how what happens in the United States is affecting the world and vice versa. So I'm becoming truly, in my mindset, global. Like, the news I'm digesting is not just American. Like, I'm looking at everything and I'm looking back at the US thinking, what is going on back home? Like, literally, I'm watching with amazement and I'm watching with horror. And I'm thinking, I don't even recognize this anymore. Like, I don't even, like, I'm telling you this because there's a part of me that's still where my heart breaks, to me. Even as I'm talking to you now, I think maybe there's a tad bit emotional about it, because I go back to the United States and sometimes I'll just sit and observe. That's what I tend to do that a lot more now. I'll go to New York, for example, and I'll just sit somewhere and I'll just listen. And I'm just watching and I'm hearing conversations. And I have to tell you, when I'm listening to conversations with each visit home, I cringe. I cringe at how undereducated and uneducated Americans truly are about the state of affairs in their own country. I am concerned about how there seems to be just this, you either are on one side or the other side, and no one can actually find a place where they can just talk about those differences. You know, what I realize about human nature, you know, just is we have more commonality than we do differences. And what I am finding out is that people are so focused on their differences that I'm looking at a nation now where it's almost like we just cannot come together and discuss the things that are actually impacting all of us. You know, we are having these cultural wars, black, white, you know, gay, straight, like there's just so much going on. And I'm just thinking, I don't recognize my country anymore.
It's so sad. Because when you think about it, and you mentioned before that you were down, you know, around September 11th, right?
Yes.
So to think of the events and how horrific it was, right? Yes. September 11th, and how much the country came together.
Beautiful.
Remember, we all remember the people that were covered in gray soot, and, you know, everybody had their American flags and bumper stickers, and there was so much pride and unity, blood drives, and, you know, what have you. To fast forward to less than 20 years, right? Because, you know, 45 did his dance around 2015, 2016.
Yes.
That in less than 20 years, we went from that, you know, unity.
Yes.
To devolving to disunity, and like you said, the undereducated and the uninformed, and this combination of culture wars and the constant grind, and then obviously the past few years with the pandemic that has now led us to this point, or maybe culminated in you making your decision?
Well, you know, there's two forces in the universe. There's fear and love. And what I've come to now understand and what I've come to observe is that there is a great deal of fear that is happening within the consciousness of my fellow citizens. And unfortunately, I feel like the powers that be are feeding on that fear for a political motive, if you will. And bringing, and here's the thing, you know, people talk about Trump and Trump and Trump and Trump. But what I'm looking at is the consciousness that created Trump. Because Trump cannot create himself. He cannot get into power on its own. There is a consciousness. And so clearly there is a, and I have to say this, there is a white man's fear. There is a white man's fear. And Trump just made it acceptable for that fear to be expressed. And so, you know, when you're seeing the attacks on Black bodies, you know, when you're seeing, you know, just the level of hatred and the level of fear and division that's going on, I always say to people, and I said it to my partner, Boban, who's not spent any time living in the United States. I said, America at this point does not need an enemy from without, because it's the enemy from within. It's its own worst enemy. It does not need a natural enemy, because it's its own enemy at this point. And looking at it, I'm thinking to myself, I have evolved. I have now become this person that's experienced life outside of the United States. And I've come to understand it's not just about what's happening, you know, in my own country. It's about what's happening around the world and how we're all interconnected. It's no longer feeling like, again, that misfit thing I talked about that you asked me early on, where I felt like I was three people, but I never quite fit in. That's what it was. I love my country, but I don't understand what's happening with the consciousness of my country. And there was also the issue of the word freedom. That bothered me a lot. I have to tell you, what really did it for me was what people think is the concept of freedom. And I'll give you a case in point is, freedom is, I had one situation where I knew that Americans were allowed to go to Cuba and travel to Cuba. Then there was another point where Americans were not allowed to go to Cuba to travel to Cuba. Now, having a British passport, I'm able to travel to Cuba. Nobody's paying me any attention. And so I think about that and I'm like, that's freedom? Another example, banking, finance. Here in Europe, they have what is called, but basically you need to report. And so every single year I've lived in Europe, I file taxes. I mean, I am one of the faithful tax filers. Like, I mean, I voted faithfully and I filed taxes. Like, I was truly an American. Now, as one of those things as an American, and people need to be aware of this, is that you must file taxes as an American citizen when you live abroad every year. Even if you don't live in America, even if you don't work in America, you must file taxes. And one of those burdens that you bear as an American is that if you have money in a bank somewhere else, they need to report back to the United States if you have a certain amount of money. I think it's over 10,000 US dollars. So you have to report that as you are filing taxes. Now, I remember that I wanted to open up a brokerage account. That brokerage account rejected me because I was American, because they didn't want the burden of having, and the risk, because the problem is that if we don't report that we have an American citizen as a customer, we can get fined and we can get in trouble for not reporting. So we're not dealing with y'all Americans, because it's just way too much administrative headache. So the reason why I'm bringing that up is because all of my interest and all of my financial holdings are here in Europe. I have nothing in the United States any longer, right? And so I realized that me having an American passport was holding me back from doing the investments that I needed to do so that I can prepare for my own retirement, because that's a very important thing. So, you know, I want to open up an ETF. You know, I want to, you know, open up these different funds. And I realized that in some of these cases, I was being prevented from doing so simply because I'm an American. And so the administrative burden of having the passport, in addition to the fact that I was spending probably 300-400 euros every year to have my taxes filed, because remember, I was having my taxes filed not only in the country where I live, but every year also to the United States. Right. And I am paying a professional accountant to make certain that all the I's are dotted and the T's are crossed, because I don't like drama of any kind. Like, I keeps my drama at one to negative one, somewhere in that range. So, you know,
we don't want no smoke from Uncle Sam.
listen. That's the one uncle I never wanted to piss off. So I wanted to ensure that all of my I's were dotted and T's were crossed. Right. The funny thing is, it took me a while to get to the decision, but I realized the only benefit that I was getting from holding onto my American passport, because remember, now I have my British passport, which is a tier level A passport. It's a tier one passport. It's one of the most powerful passports in the world. But in addition to that, I'm not prevented from, let's say, I want to take a beach holiday in Cuba, but that's not really important to me. What was important also was, a lot of people don't know this, in America, it is maybe one of only two countries in the world where it is, where it taxes its citizens based on worldwide income. And I need people to understand this before they move, because it is a real situation. And so I think Eritrea may be the other one, Eritrea, and maybe North Korea, but I know for certain America and Eritrea, I think, are the two countries that tax.
And Eritrea is like tiny compared to the United States. Let's get that clear.
Right. And I'm thinking, really? And this is the land of the free and the home of the brave? But then I'm listening to my British compatriot. Now that I have a British citizenship, I'm listening to British people who left Britain. And let's say they wanted to experience something new for themselves. And so they moved to Dubai. And like, there's a lot of Brits that moved to Dubai. And so they're no longer resident in the UK. So they're not paying taxes in the UK. They pay whatever taxes, if there are taxes to pay, in Dubai. And so I'm realizing I have the administrative burden of filing taxes. Now, of course, there is a, you know, there is a level at which you can have an exclusion. So there is a threshold in terms of income where you can actually get an exclusion, and it changes with each year. Like, they adjust it every year. But I think there was one year in particular where I was paying myself a dividend. And of course, because I'm Mr. Honest, you know, of course, I report everything and then it goes to the US. And they said, oh, we think we'll take a little bit extra from you as well. And mind you, by this time, I haven't lived in the United States for 14 years. And so I'm thinking, okay, so not only do I have the administrative burden of being Mr. Honest, but also I have the potential burden of having to pay out money if I, let's say, have a good year, or I pay myself dividends, you know, because I have a good year with my clients. And then on top of that, I get shut down by certain brokerages on this side of the world because I am an American. Damned if you do, damned if you don't. And I'm thinking to myself, the only benefit that I am getting out of my passport now at this point is the queue, the line that I can stand in when I get through customs immigration in America. Like, sir, you could stand in the American line. And I'm thinking, that's the only benefit that I have. And that benefit went away when I went to JFK Airport at one point, and the queue for the American line was so much longer than those without the American passport that those with the other passports got through faster. I said, I'm done. we are finished. Because wherein lies the benefit of this? If you're really going to be free, America, be free. And so when Americans talk about, well, we're the freest country, what does that really mean to you? What does that really mean to you when you say free? Like, what is that? Because I can tell you at least another 20 to 30 or 40 other free countries in the world that have democracy that works very well. So when you say that you are the freest, what are you really saying? What does free mean to you? That you're free to get Amazon Prime within 24 hours? Is that what freedom means to you? Because freedom means something completely different to me. And because I truly am a global citizen trying to do things on a global scale, freedom really truly means something different to me. It really, truly does. And so I thought about it for many years, but I couldn't do it because you have this emotional connection to America. You know, I'm like, I'm from New York. I'm American. Like, no, I voted in every election. Like I'm a good citizen, you know? But it was just getting to the point where I felt like I was transcending, especially now looking at where America is now. I'm like, but I don't fit into any of that. And I've become so much more. That's the word I'll use. I've become so much more. Like, I have a British citizenship. I have permanent residency status in Spain, right? My partner is British citizenship. He has a Serbian passport. Like, and then as I'm looking now, we're fast forward technology, YouTube, IG is here. I come to realize the new investment is not just your ETFs or your IRAs or your 401k. It's residency. It's freedom of movement. People, get on board. Please get on board. And the reason why this is so important is because as I finally made the decision, and by the way, my decision was partly inspired by someone I know, a brother who lives in Switzerland, and he became a Swiss citizen. And he thought about this very carefully. He said, you know what, Michael, all of my holdings, I've been working for the last 20, 30 years in Switzerland. He had his master's degree in the United States, but I think he actually pursued his doctorate in Switzerland. And from there, got a job in Switzerland, worked in Switzerland, created history in Switzerland, bought a condo in Switzerland. So he got to the point, he said, Michael, I have nothing really left. I have maybe one small bank account in America that I'd use. So if I can share something easily with my family, I do the same thing. I have one bank account in America so that if I can transfer money or if I need to a family member, it's easier to do that, you know, with that account, or they can, you know, whatever. Or if I'm in the US, I can withdraw in dollars, right? So it's easier for me to do that. But he decided to renounce citizenship after he got his Swiss passport. And as we know, a Swiss passport is one of the most powerful passports that you can have. Like, who looks at a Swiss passport and says, eh, no one. No one. And so it became clear to me, and I'm like, I have a British passport. Like, I am visa free in many countries around the world. I am able to go many places without questions or being questioned or being looked upon. Like, there's a privilege that comes with that citizenship. And daggone it, I worked for it. I took the citizenship test. I know about its culture. I know its history. Like, I spent time in the UK. I have family in the UK. So I got to the point where I said, you know something, Michael, you can do this. But I will say to everyone that it is something that you do need to be very careful about, and you need to really take into consideration what's at stake and what you are giving up. So it was not a decision that I took lightly. I took 7 years to make the decision. It's probably one of the longest decisions, because I wanted to ensure that whatever I needed out of life in this season of my life, that, you know, it's already established and set up, because laws can change and things could change and I can lose certain benefits. Like, for example, Social Security. Social Security is not one of those things that you lose when you renounce citizenship. You don't lose that. However, the United States may decide later on that they don't want to, you know, provide Social Security to someone who's renounced citizenship. Because the truth is that wherever you have already worked for a certain period of time, and I've worked a long time in the US, you've already paid into the pot. You've paid into it, right? And because I pay taxes, they can take from me as, you know, I paid into, like, this is all those sort of things that you need to think about. So if someone, let's say, for example, is a veteran and they're getting payment, you know, as because they're a veteran, that's not a move that you can make, right? Like, there's certain practical decisions that you need to consider before you make this move. And why are you doing this? What are you giving up versus what are you gaining? So it's not something that I say you should make with emotion. It is something that you actually, I almost think like you need a checklist. I honestly do. Because no matter what you may think, America is a powerful country. Its passport is a privileged passport. And so it's a decision that I did not take very lightly. But I knew that because of the life that I had set up for myself here, you know, abroad, away from the United States, And the fact that I have no intentions on going back, I don't have any intentions or any desire, zero, to go back to the United States. Like if there's any clarity that I have, it's that, Krishan. So that was another part of it too. I'm clear about that. Look, I've lost my mother. I've lost my grandmother. I've lost my father and my grandmother this last year in 2023 alone. Like, I've lost all of my immediate ancestors, right? So part of that decision also comes with the fact that any caretaking considerations that one may have, that has now been lifted, if you will, because now what was my elders are now my ancestors. So again, it's one of those decisions that you need to think about very carefully before you do. But I did it. And I will say to everyone, they're making it more difficult for people to do this. And the reason why I think that's very important to mention this is because America, in a lot of ways, wants to keep its money in America. It wants to keep tabs on Americans. And I don't know if that's what freedom is. It just doesn't feel like freedom to me if it's trying to keep tabs on everyone everywhere where they are. Britain
is not a stalker. America is a stalker. And for many people, and I've had several guests on the show that have kind of made this analogy, is like, it's an abusive relationship, right?
It's like trying
to get away from your abuser, but they make that very difficult. And it's interesting that you said about the money, because America, you know, this year made another record that it shouldn't be proud of by getting, you know, I think it's like $34 trillion deficit. And so while some might argue that paying taxes on your worldwide income, or, you know, filing an FBAR every year so that they know, you know, what's in your bank account is about transparency and paying your fair share and paying into the economy. Well, that's a hard sell when the country itself is $31 to $34 trillion in debt and continuing to write checks to other countries to fund genocide and other activities. And that's where I think the rub is, into what you said earlier about the US and its great marketing. Because when you juxtapose that and what you illustrated about freedom, it's more on keeping tabs on its citizens and less about the money. They use the money as a tool and as a method to keep track of the citizens, even when they are no longer living there. And so a lot of people have this, like, you know, misperception that when you move abroad, that you have to give up your citizenship, or, you know, there's a lot of, you know, misperceptions around the renunciation process. And that's why I really wanted to have this conversation. And I'm grateful that you've been so transparent with, you know, your thought process and what led you to this point. And
it's difficult. And again, it was difficult because, again, you don't even understand how much of your American identity is ingrained in you. Like, you, we honestly, it's so funny to me because I didn't even know what being American meant until I moved abroad. And I don't even know if that makes sense. Like, I never felt more American until I moved abroad, because then it actually became something that other people identified me as. Oh, you're an American, right? And I was like, okay, I'm an American, but what does that really mean? What does that concept mean? And then as I am, again, year one, year two, year three, year 10, now year 15, really, what does that mean? And the renunciation process, I have to let you know, was not an easy one, because it was one where I was trying to trigger it during the pandemic. And everyone needs to be aware that at that point, they were already estimating that there could be a queue of up to 10,000 Americans that were in queue to try to renounce citizenship.
And make what?
Yes, ma'am. And I need people to understand, like, this is not something that one or two people are looking to do. Like, there is a queue of people that are looking to renounce. And by the way, it's very important that everyone also understands that this is not just rich folks, because I'm not one of those. Like I am literally a regular Joe. Like if there was a regular Joe, I am he. But there are people that are looking to do this on principle. And so when I tell you that people were getting so desperate that they were looking for any consulate that would be open and available to do this, there are Americans who are living in Europe trying to book appointments in Bermuda because that was the only place that was making appointments. And they were already 11 months behind. So I remember calling up consulates every country, and there was either a case where you either had to be a resident of the country already, or you would have to be put on a waiting list. And the waiting lists were up to 12 months deep. And I'm talking about 12 months deep for places like Barcelona that were not even open, by the way, but Bermuda, Switzerland, Amsterdam, like Portugal. I literally wrote letters to every consulate that I can think of. And then I was watching a YouTube video, trying to remember the name of the gentleman, but he actually was saying, there are people that are going to Serbia. There are people that were going to different countries and finding available appointments. So what ended up happening is I ended up writing the consulate in Montenegro. And Montenegro actually had a space for me sooner than the year period. And what's interesting is everyone needs to know it's a two-part process because they want to make certain that you are in your right mind, as they say, as they call it. Are you sure that you really want to do this?
Yeah, like, are you? You want to leave all it is.
that's basically the that's exactly what it is, Krishan. So they, you know, this, it's a two-part process. You go in for the first one, and they read you off a list of this is what's going to happen if you do this, and are you sure that you are in your right mind? They also want to ensure that you're not doing this under duress. You know, that you're not being forced by someone unknowingly, unwittingly, right? And that you just, you know what you're getting into. So that's the first one. And then the next one, and you actually have to do that appointment within 48 to 72 hours, I think it is. And that's where you actually take the pledges that you know, right? You're doing the swearing sort of thing where you're saying, you know what, this is what you're giving up and the rights, you know, and all this good stuff. And you know, your passport goes with them, you're signing documents, and then you get the certification in the mail a time later. And so, but they're making it very difficult. And by the way, I remember when my friend did it, it was $450, I think it was. And now it's $2,300. So it is not cheap by any means. And I guarantee you, I can see that going. Because what I'm seeing happening right now is Europe, for example, and other countries around the world are making it more possible for people to move abroad with the introduction of these visas. I've never seen anything like it. Like when I first moved to London, I'm like, what? There was never a digital nomad visa. Remember, I came to the United Kingdom on what was a points-based system based on a skill and what I was actually going to offer, right? Now we have retirement visas, pension visas, digital nomad visas. You want to start a business visa, entrepreneurship visas. There's so many options available. People, if you don't get on Google and research this stuff for yourself, that's on you because there's so much that is out there. There's so much, way more than when I was actually doing this 15 years ago. Like it's amazing how the offerings have evolved. But now that all the offerings have evolved, it's made it so that more Americans now can consider their options. And I'm telling you right now, this is not going to be a good look because more Americans are going to be coming and moving and, you know, living in Malaysia and moving to Japan and coming to Europe and moving to the UK, Netherlands, Denmark, Portugal, Spain, because these offerings are available. Colombia is offering something. Croatia is offering something. Uruguay is offering something. Like countries are opening up to the idea of bringing in skill and also propping up their economy and willing and ready Americans, you know, that can do so, it may not be a good look when they start thinking, so what? I feel more free over here. I really don't need this passport to feel free anymore. I get a sense that they can start raising up the price of this renunciation, you know, just to dissuade, if you will. And again, it's not something that I encourage because, by the way, I still keep up with what's going on in America every day. I really do. That's the love I have. It's just that from a spiritual, maybe emotional. You know, again, in my mind, I've transcended citizenship. I feel I'm global. And so I want to live my life accordingly. So anything that does not align itself with me feeling like I have the liberty, this is what my ancestors wanted for me. This is what they wanted for me. You know, people talk about the American dream. I'm like, no, my ancestors wanted me to have a life of liberty. It was not about the American dream. My ancestors, our ancestors wanted us to live a life of liberty. My Jamaican family came from Jamaica to seek out a better life. They established the blueprint for me to be able to say, I can give myself permission to do the same. And so I am aligning myself with anything that allows me to live my best life in such a way that I truly feel like I have liberty and the pursuit of happiness, right? And if you're clocking me and stalking me, that is not liberty in my eyes.
Woo, that right there. Oh my goodness, that's a bar. And so I hate to put a pin on the conversation, but I have to. Michael, first of all, thank you for your transparency, for your clarity, for the intention that you brought into this conversation. I am so moved by your life experience, and really it's all the path, because I'm so excited for the future. And I know we didn't get to talk about like a lot of that. And so that's why, for those of y'all who are listening, we're going to have Michael on the YouTube channel for the glimpse into the future. Let's put it that way. So I wanted to get that off my chest first, is to thank you.
Thank you.
And for stepping us through not only your journey abroad, but your journey to transcending citizenship. And I love how you put that, because that's the best way to describe.
Yes.
You know, if I had to like put a cherry on top of and what's the overarching theme, is this ascension and transcendence.
Yes, indeed.
And as I think about, like I said, that the next phase potentially in that journey. First of all, I'm excited and for you and your family and for being able to spend more time with you.
Absolutely.
And also for the blueprint that you have given, because like you said several times in this conversation, was that these resources were not available when you made your journey initially. And by sharing your story, you have made your contribution to light that fire, to put forth your blueprint for someone else to find inspiration and see that as a guiding light to their way out. So for that, I am in deep gratitude.
That was my intention, because I feel that a lot of people may look to what is happening with those that are making the move and think that they are limited to, for example, pension or retirement. Just for transparency, I did this move at the age of, I had just turned 38. And I'm moving on age 54 this year. This is not something just for retirement people. This is not something that you have to wait for a particular moment in your life or a season in your life. Your life is now. Your life is today. It's today. And I have to say that in addition to being intentional, you're going to have to be tenacious and unwavering in this. And the reason why I say that is because a lot of my friends quietly thought that I was going to just pack it all in and come right back home. They didn't think I would last this long. So I'm letting you know that you're going to meet up with voices, both near and far, that may dissuade you or discourage you from your journey, if this is something that you're looking to do. you're going to have it so set in your spirit. And this is why I always tell people, if you have a vision, it's sort of like a mother carrying a child. You're not going to expose that thing to the world prematurely. Make sure that it's truly inside of you and solid inside of you, so that it's so clear where you're trying to go that nothing can move you, so that when you give birth to it, you're giving birth to its glory, and nothing that no one can say can move you, shift you left or right. Because I am telling you right now, I've had those naysayers in my life. I've had family members who did not understand why I was making the move that I was making. Why would you want to leave America? It's the best country on earth. I got a lot of that. But you have to have that thing so rooted in you, and you protect it in the womb of the of your creative being until it is, when it becomes fully formed, that you can stand in its birthing confidence. So it was, I was truly intentional in speaking to this, because I know a lot of people think that they have to wait for a particular season in their life. No, that season is now. If you are thinking about it, if you can't even, if you cannot stop thinking about it, your season is now.
Amen. Thank you for listening to the Blackseat Global Podcast. For more information on today's episode, be sure to visit our website at blackseatglobal.com. It's not only possible to live out your dreams unbothered and in full color, it is your birthright. Are you trying to sort out health plans, banking, VPN, and other connectivity for your move abroad? Well, have no fear, we've got you with the Move Abroad Starter Kit. Get yours today at blackseatglobal.com/resources. That's blackseatglobal.com/resources.